we're joined by WPR's assistant news director, Noah Ovshinsky, our news guy here on Central Time. He gives us a rundown on stories we may have missed while we were caught up in all the right-to-work news. Noah, welcome back.
It's good to be here. I'd say, you know, Chuck and Sean are going to steal my thunder, but I'd say some other things happened.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot going on, including a highly prominent non-presidential campaign or unofficial presidential campaign so far from Governor Walker.
Yeah, I think if there was any doubt before this week that Governor Walker was on the radar screen of the national media, that doubt is now officially gone.
Yeah, a lot of headlines popping up in national papers, and a lot of them from his comments yesterday at a political event.
Yeah, so Governor Walker at the Conservative Political Action Conference, or CPAC, drew a lot of attention. And what he said was that during his speech, he said that his fight with public sector workers during the Act 10 debate prepared him and prepares him to fight terrorism groups like ISIS. You know, that was a very polarizing statement. And, you know, before this week, what we've seen is really a steady increase in the amount of attention that he's been getting by national media. But between this and a few other things that happened earlier this week, he is certainly on the radar screen of the national media.
Yeah, this turned up the heat this last couple of weeks with a trips he's made, with events he's been at.
Yeah, I think really the past week or two represents really a turning point as far as the attention that the nation is giving Governor Walker. Two other big news items. One, obviously, which you just mentioned, Veronica just mentioned, the right-to-work debate that's going on and the governor's role in it, what he has said previously about right-to-work legislation and what's going to likely happen next week when it gets to his desk. That's being scrutinized at the national level. And late last week, Governor Walker declined to comment when asked about a speech Rudolph Giuliani gave at an event for Governor Walker, in which he questioned President Obama's patriotism and religion.
And what's been some of the response to that?
It's been extensive. I'll say that much. You know, supporters say, you know, it's sort of another example of the gotcha questions. And Walker himself sort of vilified the media in an opinion piece saying, you know, it's a double standard. You know, people ask Republicans questions that the media don't ask Democrats, and that he feels the questions like that are a distraction. You know, on the other side, there are columnists, politicos, pundits, and others, people on social media, calling questions like that, you know, fair game. And that really blew up around the country.
Yeah, I am on email lists for Wisconsin media and national media, and Scott Walker's name is now appearing in both of them prominently.
Yeah, I actually, just before this, I Googled the name Scott Walker and put in the little news subcategory. And, I mean, the list of national news stories in the last week went on and on. I mean, they numbered in the dozens, and I stopped at page 6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the range of coverage is amazing.
Yeah, it's really across the media. USA Today, ABC News, Mother Jones, The New Yorker, Politico, The New York Times, The Washington Post. The list goes on. And the number of these publications, websites, networks, and so forth that are turning over more and more their coverage to Governor Walker, it's increasing as the days go on. And especially as polls around the country show that he is a very serious contender for the GOP primary.
Mm-hmm. We'll get more on those CPAC comments later today after 5. Want to move on to some of the issues going on in Wisconsin, maybe the stuff that hasn't grabbed the headlines in the legislature.
Right. So there's other things happening at the Capitol other than the debate over right to work. One is a piece of legislation that essentially repeals the current 48-hour waiting period that occurs between buying a handgun and actually picking that handgun up. And a piece of legislation has been introduced by Racine Senator Van Wongard that eliminates that waiting period.
What's the case for getting rid of that?
Well, Wongard argues that this waiting period essentially can prevent people from defending themselves. He cites a case from the 1990s where a woman, as he explains it, bought a handgun to protect herself from her husband. But during the course of that waiting period, she and her two kids were tragically killed by her husband. He points to that as an example of, you know, a way in which that waiting period got in the way of somebody defending themselves. Wongard essentially has called this waiting period, this is a direct quote, a time tax.
Now, there was a hearing on this one this week. What were the arguments on both sides here?
So the vast majority who attended the actual hearing were those who supported the effort to eliminate the waiting period. The NRA was there, as were a few other state-based gun rights advocates.
Uh-huh. And what were the arguments that they made?
Yeah, I mean, these groups argue that the waiting period is unnecessary at this point because background checks, you know, thanks to technology, now they take a matter of minutes to complete as opposed to days, and that this waiting period is essentially outdated.
And the people who want to keep the waiting period?
Yeah. Just to give one example, Tony Gephardt, he is with End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. He defended the waiting period at the hearing, basically saying that it provides a cooling off period of sorts for angry spouses or partners should they want to buy a gun.
Just about out of time, Noah. I want to move on to former Senator, maybe future Senator Russ Feingold. What are we hearing about that possibility this week?
Yeah, so mark this day, Rob, because this is the beginning of a conversation that may last another 2 years. Former Wisconsin Senator Russ Feingold is leaving his job at the State Department next month. He's been serving as a special envoy to the Great Lakes region of Africa. Now, he's been largely silent on the issue of a potential rematch, but this week he did drop a breadcrumb of sorts at an event. He thanked who he called his, quote, once current and I hope future chief of staff, unquote. Who needs a chief of staff? A senator needs a chief of staff.
So that's one line, but is there anything else out there to fuel this?
Well, according to various media outlets, including the Huffington Post and others, Feingold has actually reached out to supporters around the state, and there are some familiar names there. According to these news outlets, he's reached out to Senator Tammy Baldwin, Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, and Congressman Mark Pocan, to name a few.
So current Senator Ron Johnson beat Russ Feingold last time around. He has already responded, I think, to this possibility.
Yeah. And in fact, he held a phone conference this week where he addressed issues having to do with Homeland Security funding. He also addressed the possibility of a rematch. And basically, during this phone conference with reporters, he said that Feingold essentially represents big government and that this approach is not selling well these days.
And briefly, different landscape, 2010 versus 2016?
Yeah, it will be a different landscape. 2010, Johnson handily beat Feingold, both because it was part of the Tea Party wave that rolled across the country, but also because it was a non-presidential year. 2016 is a presidential year, which means more Democrats will likely show up, giving him potentially a better chance at winning.
Noah, thanks as always.
It was good to be here. Thanks, Rob.
That was WPR Assistant News Director Noah Ovshinsky. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're continuing our Wisconsin News Roundup. We'll be talking with WPR Capital reporter Sean Johnson and WPR Milwaukee reporter Chuck Kornbach.
Right-to-work news dominated the headlines around the state this week, and the bill passed through the Senate on Wednesday night.
WPR's Sean Johnson covered that story, and he joins us now. Sean, thanks a lot for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it was an intense week here in Wisconsin as the state Republicans took up the right-to-work legislation, and you were there reporting on this. And we've got a little montage you put together just to give us an example of the sights and the sounds and the opinions that were flying around this week. Let's hear it.
What's disgusting?
Union busting!
What's disgusting?
Union busting!
This leaves it up to the individual worker to decide if they want to join their union or not.
This bill is here to increase corporate profits and make the rich richer at the expense of the middle-class families.
Wisconsin will become the 25th state in America that allows workers the freedom to choose whether they want to work for a company and be in a union or not.
Just a sampling of some of what you heard, Sean, this week at the state capitol and thereabouts. Tell us a little bit about what we just heard.
And what you just heard was a snippet of one of the protests outside the capitol building. Protests not quite as large as we saw, not nearly as large as we saw 4 years ago, but we had a couple thousand people there that day. You heard Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, the sponsor of the right-to-work bill, speaking on the Senate floor about why he supported it. State Senator Dave Hansen of Green Bay saying it was just a giveaway to millionaires. That's in the closing arguments on this debate. And at the end there, you heard Governor Scott Walker speaking at the Conservative Political Action Conference in Washington, D.C. And that's noteworthy because Scott Walker had for years said that right to work was not going to get to his desk. Now that it looks like it's going to get there, he says he supports it, and he's already campaigning on it.
And the Senate passed a Wisconsin right to work bill earlier this week. What are you expecting for the bill next week?
There's really not too much drama next week. I mean, the state assembly has a huge Republican majority. They have 63 Republican lawmakers. They could afford to lose, a few of them and still have the votes they need to pass this thing. And by and large, you know, many of the new members that they have there are pretty conservative and support right to work. The only reason they weren't going to push it hard this session is if, you know, their leadership said it wasn't going to happen, or if it didn't get through the Senate. But the Senate was really where the question mark was for this bill, whether or not they had the votes. Turns out they had 17 of them. One Republican lawmaker, Jerry Petrowski, joined all Democrats in voting no, but the rest of the Republican caucus over there held together.
Now, the bill has been described as one that would limit the power of private sector unions by allowing employees to opt out of paying union dues. How controversial has this bill been? And it's sort of hard to talk about it without contrasting it with Act 10, which limited public sector unions.
Yeah, if you want to contrast it to Act 10, what we've seen here this past week, it certainly conjures up memories of Act 10, because you had a big union protest a couple days outside this week. And you have a very contentious union bill. You have unions who believe that they're fighting for their very existence here. And so in that sense, yeah, it's hard not to think about Act 10. But it was nothing like Act 10 in terms of the size and the energy of the protests. People in Act 10 lined up around the building to testify. The Capitol was just flooded with people. You couldn't keep them away. And with right to work, you know, by the end of the day, as the Senate was concluding debate on this, the Capitol was mostly empty. It is a big bill, though. I mean, right to work, there are 24 other states that have it, but unions feel like this, coupled with what Governor Walker signed into law 4 years ago involving public sector unions, is very likely going to be, it was described by one of the speakers at the rallies as one of the darkest chapters in union history.
And we leave it there. Sean, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
That was WPR's Capitol reporter Sean Johnson covering the right to work legislation that passed through the state Senate this week.
Even though right to work got a lot of the attention, there was important news coming out of the state budget affecting Wisconsin's Department of Natural Resources.
And we're joined now by WPR's Milwaukee reporter Chuck Kornbach to get the latest on the DNR. Chuck, thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Well, news came out this week that DNR board members will be being transitioning to an advisory panel sort of scenario. What can you tell us about that change?
Well, that's a proposal that Governor Walker made a few weeks ago in his budget announcement. What happened this week at the DNR board meeting in Madison is that one of the board members, Christine Thomas, appointed by Jim Doyle, gave a history of the board and other citizen commissions that preceded it, going well back 70 more years in state history. Then what happened was sort of interesting. It was at least three Walker appointees on the DNR board all started raising concerns about the governor's proposal to make this board from a policymaking board to just an advisory board. And there will be a resolution perhaps by the board within a month or so going over to the legislature. It was uncommon to see Walker appointees even raising mild concerns about a governor's proposal.
Robin Voss has been in the past critical of some aspects of Governor Walker's plans for the DNR, including the freezing of conservation land purposes. Does this signal that conservatives are not in entire agreement about some of these DNR changes?
Well, certainly. I mean, certainly as certain areas are affected on the stewardship thing, again, the governor's proposal is basically hold off on new land buys until the stewardship program, which is now in its third version, has spent borrowed hundreds of millions of dollars and so on, and protected over 500,000 acres. Hold off on new purchases until the program has a dollar or less of debt for every $8 of property it owns, and the budget folks say that would freeze the program until 2028. Robin Voss in southeastern Wisconsin has raised some concerns. Other folks around the state have raised concerns. And the DNR board this week, though, went ahead and approved a 21,000 or so acre conservation easement buy from a timber company up north, Lime, that wants to get rid of some of its property or give up some of its property, control of it. There's still going to be timber cutting on this property, going to be recreational uses, but like other or most other stewardship programs, buildings, subdivisions won't be going up on this land. About $2 million came from stewardship. So
okay, we have to leave it there. Chuck, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay.
That was Chuck Kornbach, WPR's Milwaukee reporter, catching us up on the latest news from the State Department of Natural Resources.